Hello, and welcome back to Surgery 101, the podcast brought to you with the help of the Department of Surgery at the University of Alberta. You can find us at the iTunes Music Store, on surgery101.org, over on MedEd Portal, and down the way at the Canadian Healthcare Education Commons. It's an exciting time to be involved in undergraduate surgical education in Canada. Here in Edmonton, we've just finished hosting the National Meeting of the Canadian Undergraduate Surgical Education Committee, otherwise known as CUSEC. We had a record number of attendees, some 82 people showed up from all across the country, and we spent 3 days talking about hot topics in undergraduate education. I had a really great time because I was able to see a lot of old friends, and I was also able to meet a bunch of new people who are as interested in undergraduate surgical education as I am. We concluded the conference by naming this year's winner of the John Provan Award, who's Dr. Brian Taylor from University of Western Ontario. So, it was a great meeting, and watch this space to hear more about CUSEC in the future. Now, what about this week's episode of Surgery 101? Well, as promised, we have Kevin Mowbray back again, and this time he'll be applying some of the concepts that he brought up last week when talking about the physiology of wound healing. And this week's episode is really about the practical aspects of how to manage wounds. So he'll be telling us the important elements of history and physical examination in the patient with a wound. He'll be talking about the steps we take in preparing a wound for closure. And he'll be talking about the three general techniques for actually closing the wound itself. So let's get ready to manage the wounded patient here on Surgery 101.
Hi everyone, this is Kevin Mowbray back again for another week to discuss some more important aspects of wound management and build on what we talked about last week in the podcast on wound physiology. So I'd like to thank Dr. Brandon Ball once again for his contribution to the script of this podcast. Today we're going to be talking about wound management. Our discussion will have three parts. First, we're going to cover a few key highlights of the history and physical exam of a wounded patient. Our focus is then going to shift to the pillars of preparing a wound for closure, which are irrigation, hemostasis, and debridement. We'll finish up by describing the three methods of wound closure. So without further ado, let's get started. One of the initial steps in treating a wound is to determine its etiology, because this will influence how the injury is managed and the types of questions we're going to ask on history. For example, a simple laceration or a minor abrasion will require significantly different care than a crush injury or a so-called fight-bite puncture wound. When taking a history from the wounded patient, it's essential to be thorough. There are a couple key considerations that are especially important. Firstly, in most open wounds, it's vital to assess the patient's vaccination history in order to guard against possible life-threatening clostridial infection. Tetanus prophylaxis should be administered whenever a questionable vaccination history is encountered or when a patient has not had a booster in the last 5 years. Secondly, it is also important to note if the patient smokes or has any conditions such as diabetes that may alter vascular functioning, because these factors will influence the decisions we make in treating a patient's wound. And one example of this: smoking may impede blood flow to things like pedicled flaps. As you proceed to an examination of the wounded patient, it's vital to include an assessment of peripheral circulation, especially if compartment syndrome is a potential threat. If the cardinal signs of occlusion, being pain, pallor, weak or absent pulse, paralysis or paresthesia, are present, or if you find an elevated pressure, fasciotomy may be indicated. Once we've taken a focus history and completed the necessary exam, we are ready to prepare the wound for closure. Wound preparation consists of three vital components: irrigation, hemostasis, and debridement. For irrigation, soaps and alcohols have the potential to further damage tissue. Therefore, it's best to irrigate with physiological solutions like saline or Ringer's lactate. Irrigation is critical because it removes foreign bodies that exacerbate inflammation. It also reduces bacterial load and cleans the injury and surrounding tissue. And this allows us to more accurately assess the status of the wound. If we revisit our analogy from last week, which depicted a wound as an area of chaos and disarray akin to a bomb going off, then irrigation can be thought of as clearing the rubble and debris from the site in order to allow us to better visualize the damage. Hemostasis is our next priority, and since we have irrigated the wound, we should be able to identify any sources of bleeding and stop them. Strategies for hemostasis include applying pressure, elevating the wound, using electrocautery, and ligation. Our final step in wound preparation is debridement. Debridement can be thought of as surveying the structural damage sustained by the bomb site and removing compartments that are too badly damaged to be repaired. Accurate debridement is an absolutely essential step. Removing devitalized necrotic tissue reduces the burden on the immune system and cuts the risk of infection. Before we decide what method of closure is most appropriate, it's also important to assess the status of the wound by considering variables such as damage to deeper structures, infection risk, amount of tissue loss, and the viability of wound margins. So, now that we've prepared the wound for closure, our next task is to decide which method is most appropriate. So we have three methods of closure in our wound healing arsenal: primary intention closure, secondary intention closure, and tertiary intention closure, which is also known as delayed primary closure. Closure by primary intention involves manually approximating the wound edges, and then using sutures, staples, or tape to maintain this approximation as the wound proceeds through the stages of healing that we talked about last week. Acute, clean surgical wounds and uncomplicated lacerations are examples of injuries commonly closed by primary intention. The strengths of primary closure are that it's achieved relatively rapidly and it leads to a superior cosmetic result. However, use of this method is limited to clean wounds, which means we find less than 100,000 microorganisms per gram tissue. The wound should also be of recent incursion, which is either earlier than 8 hours, or, if you've washed and dressed the wound correctly, between 12 and 24 hours. The wound also needs to be occurring at well-vascularized sites. Then we can use primary intention closure. Situations in which primary closure is contraindicated include crush injuries, wounds with significant contamination or retained foreign bodies, and extended time lapses since the injury. Secondary intention closure involves leaving the wound open and allowing it to heal spontaneously. In this case, the wound edges are approximated physiologically by granulation and re-epithelialization at a rate of about 1 millimeter per day. Injuries commonly treated by secondary intention include infected, contaminated, and chronic wounds. In these cases, the extended inflammatory phase reduces the bacterial load, thereby dropping the risk of infection. The weaknesses of secondary closure include the excessive contraction and fibroplasia associated with a wound remaining open for extended periods. This generally results in an inferior cosmetic outcome and an increased chance for hypertrophic scarring. Additionally, secondary closure is much slower and requires dressing changes, which can burden the healthcare staff. In tertiary closure, the healing process is delayed intentionally to allow for extended granulation before using manual approximation or skin flaps or skin grafts to close the wound at between 4 to 10 days post-injury. Indication for this method of closure include prolonged intervals since injury, severely infected or contaminated wounds, and crush injuries with significant tissue devitalization. The idea behind this technique is to delay primary closure to allow for physiological debridement by the inflammatory processes, such as those we discussed in last week's podcast. So to summarize, we have discussed a few key aspects of the history and exam of a wounded patient, with emphasis on the patient's vaccination history, vascular status, and peripheral circulation. We then turned our focus to preparing the wound for closure. The most important things to remember about wound preparation are to irrigate with physiological solutions, stop sources of bleeding, and debride the wound meticulously. We finished up by talking about the three main strategies of wound closure. By understanding the indications, strengths, and weaknesses of primary, secondary, and tertiary intention closure, you will be able to treat wounded patients appropriately and achieve a high quality of care.
We'll be right back. There we go. A simple guide to wound management in 10 minutes or less. As I always say at this point in the podcast, if you have any questions or comments or suggestions for future episodes, please just drop us an email at surgerypodcast@gmail.com or else get in touch through the Surgery 101 group on Facebook. You can leave us comments in the comments section on surgery101.org, and you can also send us a tweet at Canadian Surgeon on Twitter. Next week we'll be addressing a topic that we've got a few emails about, that of informed consent in surgery. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you back here again next week on Surgery 101.